Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. And then today I'm in here with Hobo Johnson. How you doing, man?
Good. How you doing?
Very nice to meet you, man.
Yeah, nice to meet you too.
So you out here doing all the hip hop radio appearances? Are you going to be doing Breakfast Club too, or am I the only one that gets the rap take from you?
Only one. Yeah. I don't think any of that shit's lined up.
No. Mm-mm. Okay. See, so we got the exclusive.
Nice.
I'm glad, because I would hate to hear how Charlamagne would do you,
dude. Fuck, man. I've been watching that shit for years, and I always think, dude, what would he say to me?
Did you ever see what he did to Post Malone?
Yeah, that shit was hard to watch.
What are you doing for Black Lives Matter
movement? I know.
Not prepared for it.
Fuck no.
Damn.
That's his style, though. That's what's so cool about him, is that he's just ruthless.
Yeah, like, if Charlamagne sets you up and knocks you down, then people, like, it's kind of an established precedent that's something that everybody's kind of got to go through.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Like, if I got asked to go on Breakfast Club, I would know that I was going for a confrontation.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a hard person to argue with, too. He's, like, fucking...
How are you feeling about the interview thing in general? Are you transitioning well into being a public personality?
No.
No?
No. No, dude, it's so weird. And, like, we just did a bunch of interviews today, and, like, dude, it's, like, seven people looking at you in a fucking room. Like, all the ones today, there's, like, three cameras. No one's saying anything. They're just looking at you. They're on their phone. Like,
really?
It's so, like, yeah, it's just, it feels really unnatural.
Mm.
And I try to, like, make it just feel comfortable, but... It's kind
of
hard.
I went to do an interview one time where I didn't do any sort of, like, checking into what the interview was going to be like.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was definitely, like, whenever I would start talking, they would all start Snapchatting. And
yeah.
I felt so awkward about it. I'm like, I really felt like a piece of meat.
Yeah, it can feel like that sometimes, too. And the whole process of, like, I don't know, we were, like, a indie band. So now to, like, sign with a major, like, it's a whole different world.
Right. You know? Yeah. But you wanted that, right? Like, that.
I think so. I mean, there's certain aspects that I want, you know? Like, I love, like, dude, any kid getting a check, you know, it's hard to say no to that. But
yeah,
it's like, and it's like less pressure. Like, at the end of the day, I just want to make music.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
I don't want to be thinking about, like, how to strategize this shit or, like, fucking make our band bigger. I just want to, like, make songs. So.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you know, if you really want to keep growing your situation, it can be really hard to go without the label thing. Like, I've seen a lot of artists since I started doing this who had, you know, really dope, like, rabid underground followings. And then they started to pop off and stuff, and they decided not to do the label thing. And almost always they get left behind for somebody who sounds similar who does the label thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Like, there's just so much steam behind it, too. And it's like, for me, like, growing up, I think I just want stability. So it's like, with that all, at that point, you have all the shit in your hands. You know, you have all, like, the responsibility of growing your business just, like, in my hands. And I just don't like that, really.
No, yeah, definitely. So talk about those early days and, like, where you were at before you really got anywhere with the music stuff, and where that creative urge came from. Because when I hear your music, it's like, oh, shit, this is a dude who developed his style probably, like, completely away from most of the influences that we're used to young artists having, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, when I was starting out, I would just, like, work shitty jobs as a dishwasher most of the time, or made pizzas or something. And then just one day I was going to school for music composition, and then I just realized, dude, I fucking don't want to go to work. I hate that. I hate school. And I just, like, dropped out, and my rent was like $300 in Sacramento. So I started, like, doing open mics and selling albums and street performing and shit. So I would make my living just doing that. And then after a while, we played shows and built, like, a following.
And you were grinding for a long time doing, like, the street performance stuff and doing all that kind of stuff. You were grinding for a while. Like,
yeah.
How long before you actually started to really, before people started to really fuck with it?
Probably, like, 4 years.
4 years.
Yeah, probably 4 years. And, like, my first album I made in my car, and then I, like, lived in my car for a little bit. So it was kind of, that was when I was, like, 19, so I'm 24 now.
What were you recording on in your car?
Dude, I had something like this. It was a Focusrite 2i2, so it was little teeny ones, and then condenser mic. So a phantom power through the computer, so I wouldn't need anything.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
People send me shit all the time now that was recorded on their phones.
Yeah. Dude, the new iPhones are crazy.
It sounds pretty decent.
Yeah, there's an iPhone recording on my album.
Really?
From an iPhone, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, if we had to do an interview and we didn't have, like, any other way to record it, we could very easily just record
totally
it like this, and a lot of people wouldn't even notice.
Yeah, it sounds hella good, crisp. Yeah.
Crazy. So yeah. Sleeping in the car, though, like, that sounds particularly brutal. Like, what sleeping position did you ride
Dude,
at?
Dude, I had a 94 Corolla, so I'd be crunched up in the back seat, and my trunk didn't open, so I'd have to, like, be crunched up. And a lot of the time, my legs, like, almost every night would cramp in the middle of the night, so I just wake up to a fucking bad fucking cramp.
How tall are you?
Like 6'2".
6'2". Damn, you're just... I'm 6'3", but yeah, that's been my experience. Is that there's been a lot of different times where I had to sleep in the car, like with my friends or whatever, on BMX trips back in the day, and I always felt like I was by far getting the worst of it. Like, this is way more painful for me than it is for them.
Totally. Yeah, shit sucks.
Okay, so what were your parents like? What was that influence like?
I don't know. My dad's a mechanic. He, like... Alcoholism kind of runs in our family, and that's something that he's dealt with a lot when I was a young kid. So my mom moved away when I was younger. So it was kind of just with my dad just growing up, and he married kind of some just random chicks all the time.
He married random chicks all
basically,
the time?
Basically, dude. He would straight meet a chick and like...
Habitual marriage guy. Yeah.
6 months, a year, new house, all that shit.
Holy shit, that's terrible. So does that change how you think about drinking? You don't drink?
Yeah, I try not to. I try not to. Like, also, I don't think, like, a lot of that shit's genetic, you know?
Yeah.
With, like, it just gets passed down. So I don't think I have it.
I feel lucky because I never saw my parents drink my whole life. Really? Like, yeah.
Do you feel like you don't have a problem with it?
No, I feel like I've always been able to drink and never was able to really, like, take it too seriously. Yeah. But I also felt like it always fucked my stomach up so bad that I never really wanted to... I never felt like I would be able to get really into drinking because it would just fuck my shit up.
Yeah, that's a lot of people where you just wake up and feel bad. Like, that's with me. I just want to feel bad tomorrow. So I try to, like... Just drink hella water or something.
Yeah, like if I was sitting here doing this interview right now and I was dealing with like a crippling hangover because I was up till 9 a.m. drinking, this would not be fun. Yeah. I'd be panicking in my brain, thinking like, oh my God, like I can't wait till this is over. And that's just like, that's, I don't know. I think music is kind of like that and podcasts is definitely like that for me, where the quality of your brain when you're creating matters a lot.
Yeah.
And if you feel like dog shit, you're probably not as likely to make a good song or do a good interview, right?
Totally. But then it's like, then you could throw it back to like all the huge artists that like do heroin and make masterpiece albums, you know? It's like...
No, I think about that a lot too.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people that I like, I just think it's different types. Different people can tolerate different stuff. I know dudes who are like 50 years old. They've been drinking and doing coke since they were like 15. And they seem like they're holding together pretty all right.
Yeah.
I don't think I would be capable of the same thing.
No. No, I feel it.
I think my heart would explode.
Yeah. I can feel it too.
Not in a metaphorical way either.
But yeah. I can feel it too. Like when I start to do bad shit, I can just feel my body's falling apart. I feel like. Like just my fucking brain, my arm, my limbs just don't work right.
Yeah. Do you feel like you've gotten a taste for sort of any kind of rock star lifestyle yet? Or have you managed to keep it pretty low key?
Yeah. I mean, in Sacramento, there's nothing you can really do over there. But I mean, we've had like, we'll play our festivals and kind of go off a little bit or do that. But it's just like, I think a lot of it's this grandiose idea of like what that even means, like being a rock star, being like a popular singer. I think it's all like just a giant fucking mirage.
Yeah.
You know, like definitely. I think like I've in the past have been in relationships or been having my life and imagine like what it could be. And then I'll like break up with my girlfriend and do all this shit. And then I go and try and live that. And it's just not. It just makes me feel worse.
Right, like you think you're happy, and then you sort of get a taste for something else, and you realize that you weren't really acting on your own behalf.
Totally, totally. Like, I was dating this girl that I loved a lot, and then I just broke up with her, and then went on the road and started just, like, fucking, and it just made me feel 20 times worse than I did before.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So now it's like, now I feel like I'm fully on the other side of it, that I feel like I realize, like, nothing will make me happy other than myself, you know? Like, I gotta really, like, figure out, like, having good friends or, like, having good relationships or whatever instead of, like, running around doing stupid shit.
Definitely. That's, like, the biggest thing. Because, I mean, having a good group of friends that you really are tight with, like, as you go through the process of becoming famous or successful or whatever, to be able to hold on to that is such a crazy challenge because you have these people that you love and stuff, but your life is going to be changing dramatically while their lives stay approximately the same. And you're just going to become more and more different. And it's just always a challenge to try to navigate those seas.
Especially on the road when you leave and, like, you come back, or like sometimes different where you like when I'm on the road, I feel like I stay exactly the same, and then virtually, and then I come back and everyone's like doing different shit,
yeah.
And I feel like I like missed out on like being a friend to like so many of my friends.
You do a lot of living when you're gone for a month or two.
Yeah.
Whereas like a lot of the people at home, it's like realistically they go to the same job every day and they might go to the same bar every night and they might hang out with the same people every day. And it just sort of starts to just draw a line in the sand that you're different than them all of a sudden.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. That feels like that all the time. That's why it's so important to get back and like go home and fucking talk to people and get out. Cause then it's like, yo, years doing that, and now it's you don't even fucking know anyone. You know?
Yeah, all of a sudden you're like Lemmy from Motorhead, and you're just nobody knows what fucking planet you're from.
Exactly.
It's got to be kind of tricky for you, too, I feel like, because you're sort of like your fans, I think, definitely love you because you just have this like sort of everyman type vibe. Like they just see you as like, as themselves, like this nice, normal kid. You're not playing the sort of like rock star character. You're not trying to be anything you're not.
Right.
And I mean, that must be kind of the scary thing about doing all this bigger stuff, getting on a label and like putting out bigger and higher quality videos and everything.
Yeah.
It's like navigating that path can be kind of perilous.
Totally. And it's like a lot of it too is just me experimenting. Like the last video of A Typical Story is this. Dude, we spent so much money on this video. Like, I wrote the treatment, but it's well produced. And I kind of realized I don't really like that. Like, I didn't think it had enough feeling, you know? Like, I feel like our fans could really tell, like, when I make something. So, like, all the rest of the videos, I got a bunch of film equipment I'm going to try to, like, shoot ourselves. But, dude, people are going to sniff shit out. If you're being, like, somewhat ingenuine, people will just, they know. I could tell, you know?
Right. Like, and then all of a sudden you're doing, was that video shot in California?
Los Angeles, yeah.
It looked like it.
Yeah.
And the people can probably, you think they can sense that?
Probably. A lot of people said that too. We're talking.
Like I saw Blueface do a video in this house last month.
Drake did one. Drake did one.
Really?
Of that. Yeah. Right before. Yeah.
Holy shit.
But fucking, yeah. We just got to keep it like normal. I got another song coming out. I'm shooting the video for it. It's called Subaru Crosstrek.
Uh-huh.
I bought a Subaru Crosstrek and made
What's
that? It's a fucking car.
But
I like wrote the whole video. I'm gonna shoot it, direct it, like do all the photography for it, so I'm pretty excited about it.
Definitely. That's exciting. So do you feel like the label is like open towards you like saying that you want to do stuff that's a little bit more low-key or
totally.
Like, less big budget? They're cool with that?
Yeah, definitely. I use a lot of the budget just for like buying equipment and everything, so yeah, I mean, I definitely have to not make shitty videos, but I think I can do that.
That's pretty funny. So did you, like, what category, if I had asked you when you were sleeping in the car and I had sort of asked you, like, what kind of music are you trying to make? Would you have said, like, I'm making rap?
No. Or
that would be an oversimplification, right?
Yeah.
Because now you're sort of dealing with, like, all the pressures of, like, being a rapper in a weird way.
Kind of, yeah. I don't know where the fuck I'm at because I don't feel like I'm on the rap side. I don't feel like I'm on the rock side. So I kind of have always felt that I'm just like my own thing, though every artist probably wants to say that about themselves, you know? But I definitely am straddling the line, I think.
Yeah, but like, there's definitely something really unique about your sound that clearly is like taking on influences that average hip hop person doesn't have.
Totally. Yeah. And it's a bit of both. Like I really got a chance when like acid rap, I feel like a little bit of that people can hear, but also like Bright Eyes.
Oh, wow,
like
really?
A huge Bright Eyes fan, yeah.
That's interesting, because I was listening to a lot of Bright Eyes in, like, 2002.
Damn, the height of it?
I don't really know what they've been doing since, but I had a couple years there where I might have teared up a little to some Connor.
Yeah.
Connor.
I'm Wide Awake It's Morning is one of the best albums ever made.
Was that back then? Or is that newer?
Because
I can't remember.
That's 2004. That's the one with the red and the white houses on it.
Oh, yeah.
It's with the big hit. What's the... this is the first day of my... It's that
right?
That album, yeah.
That was very much like the time period where all of a sudden I liked the same music as my little sister.
Ooh.
Because I was fucking with like Taking Back Sunday.
And emo shit.
That was like the emo revolution at that time.
What about Say Anything? Do you like Say Anything?
I was into Say Anything, but not like super diehard. I was a Brand New fan.
Brand New's tight.
Get Up Kids.
Yeah, the whole shit.
There was this band, The Anniversary, from I think they're from Massachusetts. And I remember I was doing graffiti with this dude one day, like, because I was like a 15-year-old who would just find people to do graffiti with on message boards on the internet.
Sounds dangerous.
Yeah, it was really weird just meeting up with like some 30-year-old dude. It was like, they were like drinking 40s and smoking cigarettes. And I'm like 15, meeting up with these dudes to go to the train yard and do graffiti.
Wow.
And one of them told me that he was in The Anniversary. And I was just like, holy
fuck. That's crazy.
That's crazy.
Wow.
You should honestly go listen to that.
Yeah, I should. What was he doing painting? He just started painting after the band?
No, he had just always been doing it. Actually, I'm not saying the dude's name, but he did get caught at one point and charged with like many millions of dollars worth of graffiti in Boston.
Oh my.
He's like one of the most legendary dudes out there who didn't get caught for 20 years.
And he had to pay for it?
Yeah, because that's what they do.
Jesus.
They catch you doing graffiti and they will fucking charge you like, let's say, like, you know, $5,000 per wall you ever painted. So, like, very easily you can have millions of dollars.
And they check your tags and shit.
They'll have a handwriting analysis expert and shit. Yeah.
Wow, that sucks.
But the cheat code is that there's, like, really, just because the handwriting matches up or whatever, it's like if you don't admit it, then it's really hard for them to actually get you.
That's crazy.
You don't have any graffiti background I should know about?
I can never fucking know.
You're not a drawer?
No way. Okay. No, it's always been bad.
Okay, so when it really started cracking off though was when you did this NPR thing.
So we were just some fucking band from SAC, no one really cared about, and then we did the contest for the first time, and just first day, dude, we released it and we watched it in the first day and it was doing pretty well, and then the next day we woke up, it had like a million views.
Wow.
And they just kept, but dude, every day, if like I could scroll on my phone notifications and it was just continuously every second. It was fucking insane.
Wow. And so that backyard, that was where you were living at that time?
That's my friend's backyard. I lived in Oak Park too, but I lived down the street. That was my friend Derek's. He's the guitarist in the band.
Okay.
Yeah.
Damn.
On so 44th.
You got a million views. Did you even know why? Like, were people doing blog posts about it or like message boards?
Dude, just sharing. It got 500,000 shares. I think now it's got like total on Facebook like 80 million views or something.
Whoa.
But dude, just shares. Just people shared it and shared it and shared it and shared it. And I think a lot of people like thought it was hella bad. So it was a mix of like that polarizing aspect where it's like a lot of people hate, a lot of people like, and it drives up the conversation, you know?
Really? Were you like, because you probably at that point hadn't really had to deal with much negativity in terms of your art. So it's like all of a sudden you're like, oh, cool. Dude. People hate me, but also I'm popular at the same time.
It was the most like catch 22 thing I've ever seen in my life. Like finally people like my shit and then also people hate me and that makes me feel bad. You know, before now it's like I don't really care as much. I don't really pay attention to it. But
how old are you now?
24.
Okay. Yeah. So when it first started happening, you're still young, you know, like I mean, to me, dealing with the hate and dealing with the negativity, it's like being like a boxer. Like if you're a boxer and you've only been out and like been in a professional fight once, you're going out there, you're so nervous, you don't know what the fuck to expect.
Totally.
And then you get destroyed on the internet over and over and over. And over time, it's just like, well, all right, now I just don't even fucking care that much anymore. It's like, if you're a professional boxer and you get the shit beat out of you 50 times, by the last one, it's got to be like pretty chill.
Totally. At first, dude, I was completely mind blown seeing all this shit. But yeah, I mean, what's the point? I realized too, it's like, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it's like, I still get to like live my dream, basically.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Do you think you're like, your actual happiness level is a lot higher now, or is it kind of a give and take?
I think it's a give and take.
You had no worries then.
Yeah, that's the trade-off. Is like, now I'm always stressed out. I do have moments of like fucking bliss. So like when we're on stage or we play festivals, I love playing festivals. So like every time we're at a festival, there's always like a few moments that like it's pure happiness. But a lot of the rest of the time, I'm like stressed out, trying to make sure that all our band shit's going well. And it's just, it's that trade-off. I do feel like sometimes I wish I could go back, because before it's like, I had $20 and didn't even care, you know. I was just like, enjoying the chase.
Yeah.
And now I feel like the chase, not that the chase is over, but I don't think I care about like having the biggest song on the radio or being the biggest band or playing bigger rooms. I think the chase is the funnest part. So now I'm trying to figure out like other avenues to do stuff. Like I want to get into film. So maybe like in a few years I'll just stop doing music, doing a film.
Like what if you had written Old Town Road? And you are dealing with that right now.
Dude, that's a mind-blowing fucking process, dude. And Billie Eilish, too. It's like, that's so much shit.
Right? Yeah.
She's so young. And this, I can't imagine. If I'm stressed out with the shit that I'm going through sometimes, like...
Like, can you imagine what it would be like to, like, you can't even walk... Like, Billie Eilish can't go anywhere
no,
and do shit.
No.
She can't go to Walmart.
The social interactions are just completely cut off, pretty much. And everyone's nice to you, and everyone's treating you the right way, or people trying to use you and make you do shit you don't want to do. Like,
right.
Yeah, it's a pretty, like, weird thing to go through.
Because when you're smaller, there's an extent to which, like, every time you have an interaction with somebody, it feels more real.
Yeah.
And the bigger you get, the more... Do you ever feel like you're almost just being, like... like when you take like 100 selfies in a row and you just start to feel like, damn, like does anyone even care about like who I actually am or what's going on in my brain?
You
or,
do that too?
Yeah, sometimes like when you're taking 100 selfies and you can't even really have a conversation while you're doing it and stuff because it's just this like mechanical process and you're like, fuck, like this is what it is, huh?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I like there's some moments like when we, after every show, I always make sure to go out and talk to everyone and like take pictures. And sometimes if we're playing like 2000 cap or something, it's like 2 hours of me just after a show, just standing there. So after a while, I mean, there's some moments where people just treat me bad or like be just inconsiderate, you know, but most of the time it's like, it makes everyone's day, you know?
Yeah.
And like, if I have the power to do that, like I might as well sacrifice however I feel like. Make someone feel better.
No, yeah, definitely. Like, even though it's sort of weirdly torturous, it's like you know how happy it makes people, and that makes it so it's like I was hearing that Jim Carrey just doesn't do it.
Really?
Like, you could see Jim Carrey and like have a conversation with him or something, but he's not taking a photo with you. Wow. He just won't do it. And I was just like, man, that's got to be like that has to do a lot with the fact that he's been famous as fuck for like 100 years. Yeah,
totally. He just doesn't give a fuck anymore.
It's like pre-internet too, because he remembers when it used to be autographs.
Hmm. Yeah, the only autographs.
God, I'm not. I mean, but still, people make you do that. Still, people make me sign their fucking Vans. I and do shit.
The same shit, dude. One person signed. Even when you sign one person's Vans, you sign fucking everyone's Vans right afterwards. You know.
Oh, that's the worst part. Or one person will ask you to sign their jewel, and then every other person wants you to sign their jewel too. The jewel thing drives me crazy because this shit didn't even exist to me until like a year or two ago.
I know, that's just crazy. You got to sell them here too, right? Sell all the shit for it.
What?
The jewels? No,
oh yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's how we make the best of the situation. We sell them too.
Yeah, to the kids. Not kids.
21 or older.
My bad. But it's cool. It's cool to fucking make people feel better. That's wild.
Definitely. The festival thing, is that like, is it the compare playing to like a couple thousand people to playing like, you know, 400 people in a smaller room. Like, it's on one hand, it's good because you're hitting more people and it feels good to look out and see thousands of people jumping up and down.
Uh-huh.
But it's a little less intimate.
A little bit. I mean, it all depends on the kind of artist you are, I think. Like, if you have a lot of production and you play to tracks and you like just sing your songs, I think it's a bit harder.
Mm.
But like, to me, it's fun. Like, I always run off and jump off the stage and run around and fucking... It's just easier. I can see everyone's eyes, which is, to me, it's way better. Like, I try to play as much as we can.
Mm.
We're about to play Lala. It's pretty exciting.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know. Reading Leans, too.
I was just in England for Wireless Fest, and we were, like, on stage seeing, like, Migos and Thug and shit, and they're just, like, the way that those fans were losing their fucking minds.
Crazy. What part of England?
Just London.
London? Yeah. London's cool. Dude, there's a part in Newcastle. I don't know if you've been to Newcastle.
No, I haven't.
Dude, it's like there's certain parts that you go that everyone just drinks like absurd amounts of alcohol.
Right.
Dude, and they just go fucking insane every show. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, allegedly a lot of people do a lot of Molly in England, but when I was in Australia is when I really like was getting the sense of like, holy shit, everybody around me is like a zombie off hella drugs right now.
At a festival?
Yeah, like, I don't know. In Australia, it's just something about Molly, I guess.
Yeah.
But then meanwhile, you're at the festival and you don't smell weed ever.
Uh-huh.
Because it's just, like, hard as hell to get it
and
out
also,
there.
And also, yeah, I heard it's hella shitty there.
You smoke weed?
Oh,
damn. Nah. It sucks. I don't know if we can be friends.
I'll smoke it a little bit. If I'm trying to go to sleep, we'll smoke a indica, I think. Kind of makes you go to sleep.
Yeah, indica's the one.
That shit that wakes you up.
Oh, yeah, the sativa that'll have you running around the streets.
Oh, dude, I'm such an anxious person.
Are you really?
Yeah, I'm such an anxious person. When I smoke, I just get way more anxious.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of people have that issue with weed. Like, my girlfriend, I don't know, when I met her, like, she would hit the blunt a little bit and stuff, and she'd be cool, maybe go to sleep. She just won't even go near it anymore because she ate, like, a crumb off of a weed cookie, and she got so sick that she puked.
Fuck. And it was just over. People go fucking insane off the edibles.
Yeah.
I've seen the people... Yeah, eat a whole brownie and just lose their mind.
No, that could you might have to cancel a show if you do that. Real talk. So do you not like doing interviews with your managers in the room?
It's just more the ones that are this is a lot chiller, but a lot of the other ones, man, it's like they got fucking four cameras, they got a manager, assistant manager, camera operator just standing there.
Oh
like
God.
It makes it just feel like it's like I'm just like a product.
I think about that a lot.
Yeah.
Like, to what extent is my podcast considered cool or valuable or fun because it's so low key, because it's in the back of a bike shop, because you don't have to go to some weird studio, because there's just some people kicking it, hanging out. When you showed up, there was like a bunch of fucking gang members in back. And, you know, like, I feel like to a certain extent, like a lot of the steps I could take to make it more professional would actually make it wacker, you know?
Yeah, no. No, it's way better like this, dude. The other, I don't like the other shit.
No, it's good to hear. Yeah. Even these lights, I feel some type of way about it in the sense of like, just feels kind of unnatural, you know?
Kinda, yeah, but it would be dark as fuck in here without those.
Oh, no, definitely, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, this is cool. This is so low-key compared to a lot of the shit.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So, the hate that you've gotten, I was kind of intrigued by the fact that you I feel like you've dealt with a lot of, like, extreme hate for, like, real kind of silly stuff that you probably weren't even at fault for. They called you the pride of Oak Park, huh?
Yeah.
And that got you in a bunch of trouble?
Yeah. So I was on... Yeah, so I was living in Oak Park for a couple years at this point, 3 years. And then someone just wanted to write an article on me. It's a local newspaper called SNR.
Mm.
And they're submerged, actually. But they called me when I saw it. I was like, but I didn't say anything. And that's kind of the problem. Like, I didn't, back in the day, like, I didn't like the idea of, like, the public perception of me having a say in it or having to deal with it. But now I've, like, that really made me realize, like, everyone freaked out, got really mad. Or some people freaked out, got really mad. And I shouldn't be labeled as that, but... it wasn't like me. I don't dictate my fucking...
See, I kind of like the fact that you didn't respond to it in the first place, just because it's like the bigger and bigger celebrity you get to be, the more and more that kind of becomes like the default response. Like when you look at like a Beyonce or a Jay-Z, is that there's almost nothing that you could say that they would actually feel the need to respond to.
Yeah, totally.
And I kind of like that.
Yeah, they just so above it. Yeah, I mean, with me, it's like also me not saying anything is kind of fucked up too. It's like me... It's like the privilege of not having to say anything, you know?
Right.
So it's a really complex situation. It's not even like the problem is in Sacramento, the Oak Park is just getting gentrified like so quickly.
Right.
So it's like it's not even me is the problem. Like maybe.
But you are a good representation for the problem.
Totally,
right?
totally. Like the fucking dude to represent it. Like, you know, there's so many businesses moving in and not even hiring like local African American kids or whatever it is. But like, I think was the easiest thing to throw it on. But I'm glad, like, at the end of the day, like, open conversation, and that's progresses the whole thing.
Right. Like you could talk about gentrification all the time, but until you have a nice stand in for it, like a nice face.
Yeah.
That's helpful in terms of, but have you felt like, as much as there seemed like a lot of controversy about that, and as much as you might have been walking into places and thinking that everybody was like hating on you or something, because you get that feeling when you've really been shit talked online. Like, you walk into Whole Foods, like, oh my God,
I know. Yeah. I hate that fucking feeling. Yeah.
But in reality, it's like a really fringe thing, and you probably have never had anybody say anything about it, right?
Yeah, no, not really. I mean, a little bit. I've had some problems at like bars late at night, you know, someone will be drunk and talk shit. Yeah, but it's like, dude, like, before all that shit, they even said that shit, like, I was in Oak Park doing, like, recording, like, teaching kids recording, like, at the shelter or whatever, like, teaching me as much as I can. So a little bit of it's like, dude, I was, like, trying to help, you know? And before, I was, like, donating my time and making sure that, like, we recorded not a whole album. I think I did, like, 6 or 7 songs for, like, at a homeless youth center. So it's, like, fucking... Dude, I'm trying.
Yeah.
Probably more than that guy talking shit is, you know?
Yeah, and you're young as hell and you're just sort of, you know, figuring shit out and everything. Yeah. It's like kind of weird to put that much responsibility on a young ass kid, right?
Yeah, it's pretty weird. But yeah.
I feel it. What's it like having the band? Like, just in terms of, like, you're the one composing it and then they're sort of like, do they never have anything to do with, like, you actually composing songs, or what's that dynamic
like?
They
do. It's really strange, actually. Ours is like, it's kind of in the middle of, like, they're not session players, but they're like, not in like the production process really. So it's basically, if I need a guitar part or like need someone to play bass, they'll come and play on it. And it's like, but we try to like figure out, like, it took a while to figure out the boundaries of everything, you know? It's like when we do interviews or stuff, like, they're not really invited from the people, and like I try to get it sometimes, and you know, it's a bit difficult, I guess.
You ever have that vibe though where it's like kind of like they feel like they might kind of want more recognition and shit?
Yeah, I mean, that's just natural though. That's natural, and like they are like really humble dudes, but it's just more sometimes, like, even at our shows, like, people will be like just not giving them enough, like, I think, respect or whatever it is. But Yeah, it's extremely, it's one of, been one of the hardest things for me to deal with is that.
It's just that sort of natural, like, hierarchy that comes with it.
Yeah, and they're all my homies, and we had to figure out money shit, and, like, at first, like, getting signed and what that looked like, and the money of the records, money of live shows. It was just, like, to do with your best friends, like, out of nowhere, knowing we all got, you know, $50 a show in the next moment, you know.
Mm.
So it's been pretty difficult.
When you sit down to write music at this point, does a lot of the kind of complications that have come with your position changing, does that kind of weigh on your brain? Does that make it harder for you to just do the creative process, which is obviously what made people love you in the first place?
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. It's kind of, you just get in your head a little bit. I got to, like, get away, I think, to write now. But, I mean, you just talk shit. You know, like, someone will say something fucked up about you. I mean, it doesn't happen anymore. But when I was younger, like, someone would say something, like, a character fault, and then I'd think about it for, like, you know, a couple weeks or whatever. It's kind of the same thing where people will say my flaws on fucking Twitter or whatever it is, and I don't usually care, but I think when I write, it sticks in the back of my mind a little bit, and I try to... I think it's actually what made the new album sound so different, is that I try to make sure that, like, every song is different. Like, right. The stylistically, like, this song is a little bit more hip-hop, this song is, like, a straight rock song, this song is, like, folk song. Like, I made that a goal to change it up.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Just that sort of experimentation. I mean, I guess that's kind of, like, the scary thing for you is just that you might somehow work your way into a place where you don't feel like you have the freedom to just really express yourself, and then that's kind of when everything starts to suck.
Yeah. Yeah, and if it ever gets to that point, I'll just leave. Yeah. You know, I'll just, like, do something else.
You're not really on Twitter, huh?
No, I, like, a little bit. I don't
but
really...
I noticed you don't really tweet. I'm like, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah, I don't really tweet.
It's a toxic place.
And I just don't have shit to say, like, really. Like, anymore, like... I used to tweet a lot, but now it's like, it's just like throwing words into the void, I feel like.
Mm. It's just, like, it's not a place where you could really have a good conversation, I'm going to be honest, at this point. As much as it's like, oh, you're having a conversation with the whole world, it's just not really a place where you're going to really be able to have, like, a nuanced conversation. Like, if you say anything interesting, it's going to be warped and skewed into a way that you probably weren't comfortable with.
Totally. Yeah, and that's just the problem with the internet in general. Like, everything gets taken out of context, I feel like. But it's also, like, I really see the social medias as, like, this fucking false place, like, this facade of a community. I don't just feel like it's very real, or, like, I try to get more, like, more focused on, like, the shit around me, I guess.
Yeah, the closer you can stay to real life, the better, I think.
Because I'm a scroller, too, and, like, I'm a scroller.
Can't even scroll in peace.
I know. But I get anxious, dude. I'm just scrolling all day. I'll be on my phone all the time. So.
Yeah. Sometimes I think I'm addicted to reading, like, other people getting offended by, you know, like...
Your shit?
No, not by my shit, just by anybody's shit. Like, I'm reading about, like, the latest thing that the trans community is offended by this, and I'm just reading about it, like, wow, okay.
You're interested.
I'm interested. I don't really, like, I don't really have a dog in the fight. I'm not really, like, invested. My life's not going to really change from reading about it, but I'm, like, I'm still interested in reading about Scarlett Johansson getting called out for saying that she would take a trans role again or whatever.
Oh, wow.
And it's the same process, because then she apologizes. You could have seen that coming to mind. Away.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's just fucking opinions. It's just opinions. All it is. Every post that I see is just someone's opinion.
Ain't that the truth?
It's annoying.
What are you doing after this? Like, in terms of, are you, you're just on full blown media blitz right now?
Yeah, kind of. Not really. We just have some other stuff tomorrow, and then we have a festival in a few days. So
The Lollapalooza one.
No, we're opening for. It's a festival in Minneapolis for Tim McGraw.
Whoa.
Pitbull. Who else? Like, Aerosmith. And then us or something.
Is this a bill with, like, 500 bands and you're just, like, near the bottom?
It's,
or is,
like,
it, like, eight? Okay.
It's like eight. Dude, I'm pretty sure we play right before Pitbull.
Wow. That's amazing.
It's going to be a fucking weird time.
You know what they say, never play after Pitbull.
Yeah.
I don't know if they say that, but...
No, they still say that.
Really?
Yeah, I've heard that. No, that's going to be sick. I can't wait to see him, dude.
Holy shit.
In a suit, just fucking just tuxed up.
Yeah.
That's going to be sick.
Dude, we were at when we were in England, we saw like these flyers because God, they must have so many festivals out there because Wireless was just finishing and they already had another one with, I think it was like Barbra Streisand or Celine Dion or something.
That
it was,
sounds good.
That was crazy to me because I had never even thought about there being festivals for like real like adult audiences like that. Like every festival I've ever been to has been like mad, you know, young people.
Kids, yeah, I know. And there's gonna be a bunch of fucking dude. Who goes to a fucking Tim McGraw show? Who goes to an Aerosmith tour, like, and play in front of moms, dude?
That is what I kind of like about festivals, though, is you get to see, like, a percentage of society that probably doesn't really come out that often.
Yeah. Like we played Bonnaroo, and a lot of it was, like, what you're saying, like, young kids. And then Fish played, you know, Fish?
Yeah.
Fish played, and it was just, like, all fucking old people.
You a Fish fan?
Not really. They had, I listened to that cover that they did of Gin and Juice when I was younger.
Wow.
I know. That's all I know about Fish.
Call the woke police on you for that one. Yeah, like, how dare you?
I know, my
bad. No wonder he's a gentrifier.
Oh my god.
Colonizer.
I know. I like the original better though.
Really? Yeah. I never got into Fish, but I used to listen to like Grateful Dead a little bit. But it was like, you know, I got into Grateful Dead and then realized that I liked like three songs and then I really did not give a fuck about the jam band elements of them just sort of bugging out.
Noodling for 2 minutes.
The noodling is not my speed.
No, mine either.
If you, in terms of like actual rap that you listen to in present times, is there anything in particular that you get into
nowadays, like new shit?
Yeah.
Let's see. I don't think I've heard a lot of like rap shit that I really liked recently. I think the last project I really liked was The Waters by Mick Jenkins.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. That was like my last favorite one. I mean, yeah, none of it really. I don't like, I haven't thought anything's too good, to be honest.
There's a song, Old Town Road, you should really check out.
I listened to that EP, though. That was pretty good.
Panini. Panini was the only other song I gave a shit about that. I was like, okay, I'll listen to that
again. I thought Rodeo was kind of cool.
Yeah, okay.
I thought it was pretty cool. But I don't know. I used to like every, like Vic Mensa's internet tape, like Acid Rap, Born Sinner, like Section 80, Oxymoron, like that. I feel like that time I only listened to rap, and since I just can't find shit that I really like anymore for some reason.
See, that's really interesting to me because I could kind of even tell when I first started listening to you. I'm like, I bet this guy likes early Chance.
Yeah, you know? It's amazing. Even 10 Day.
Like, there's a lot of people who that was like even when I talked to my girlfriend when she was in college listening to like early Chance the Rapper, knows all the words.
Yeah,
that just hit for a certain audience that, I mean, I was not listening to Chance the Rapper that early.
And you've listened to it though.
I listen to him a lot now, but yeah.
Dude, it was such like, for me being a like a hip hop fan, was this the most mind blowing like album to ever listen to. It was so like different than anything else that I feel like anyone could like.
No, yeah, definitely. Yeah. He really cracked the game open with that to an extent that I don't even think he necessarily gets credit for the extent to which he sort of changed things with
that. No, it's probably like, I think, top three best albums ever made. Acid Rap.
No, yeah. I mean, I've heard so many fucking people mention it, honestly, that it's like, if I was 10 years younger, that probably would be like, if I had that in me.
How old are you?
35.
What? Really?
Crazy, right? Wow, I'm gonna be dead soon.
Like, you look young, though. You look like late 20s.
No. I'm 35 and I'm filling up my will as we speak.
Really? Do you have a kid?
No.
Oh, fuck.
I know, right?
Yeah, you should get one.
Whenever I have people on here, like rappers who have, you know, four kids, and they're just like, oh, like they like scoff at me because I haven't made a baby yet. They're like, what are you doing? I get what you mean because it's like, if I had a kid right now, by the time they're graduating college or whatever, then I'm going to be, what, like almost 60?
Dude, just the old gray dad. Yeah, I remember those back from elementary school.
Meanwhile, like if you knock a girl up at 17.
Dude, you're going to be able to like cross your kid up when he's like 18.
Right, my kid could probably beat my ass right now if I had a kid at 17. There's a good solid chance that he could fuck me up. He might be taller than me, probably. Maybe better looking.
I know. That's how it is. Your kids are always better looking than you. Really? But I'm like, that's my main thing is being like afraid that having a kid and then like not being able to play basketball with my kid, you know?
Oh.
I feel like that was, me and my dad did that about like a lot when I was a kid. So I've, for some reason, I want to like have a kid soon, mainly for that reason.
Really?
To play basketball with him, yeah.
Yeah, my dad didn't have me until he was like 32.
Wow.
That's kind of crazy.
Yeah. You passed him up.
Yeah. But actually, you know, that's crazy too. You know who Tim Westwood is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tim Westwood's 61.
Really? I haven't seen him in the last few years.
No, he still does a show. I've seen him in real life. He's like ridiculously skinny and he wears these like big polo shirts. Wow. He's got good old man swag.
He's probably so cool too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I just can't even imagine what being 61 is going to be like. I'm like, God, if I'm still interviewing rappers at 61, I'm very interested to see what the Peanut Gallery has to say about me.
I don't know. That's crazy, though. No Jumper 40 year anniversary. That'd be crazy, man.
Little Pump in a wheelchair. Yeah.
Dude, I can't wait to see some of the rappers gray, man. It's gonna be crazy.
No, yeah, because now, you know, they do festivals that are like, oh, like these are they'll do a festival with all like the sort of dope 90s rappers, you know? And it's weird to think that like 20 years from now, there might be like the return of SoundCloud tour.
Oh my God.
Everybody grizzled as fuck. They've been terrible.
That'd be a sick tour, though.
That's gonna be crazy because everybody won't even be that old yet.
I know. Like 40, 35.
Yeah. Okay, so what do you want? The new video's out, as we discussed.
Yeah, new album's coming out.
New album's on the way.
Yep, September. I don't think I could say that, but...
It's okay.
Yeah, new song comes out in like a week and a half, I think.
Week and a half.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm prepared.
Cool.
Hobo Johnson, my man. Appreciate you, Jim. Peace. Nice getting to talk to you.
Yeah.
No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. Check us out on YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes. All right, man, that was fun.